Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and I have made my return to preach the good word about the Pittsburgh Steelers' victory 20-13 over the preseason Super Bowl champion Cleveland Browns. But to rejoice with me, not only today is it Larry and Curly, but we may also have Mo. I'm not sure which of us is which, but first let me welcome a one Mr. Brian E. Roach. What's up, Brian? I knew you would like that. And the Professor Zach Metler completing our three-man booth. How you doing, Zach?
Not too bad. Been a hell of a lot worse, that's for sure.
You know, I was thinking I'm going to get some emotion out of you, Zach. I've seen you remove a shirt and flip it around like a helicopter when the Steelers beat the Patriots the year before. I know you got it in you, man.
I'm telling you. Don't you worry. It'll happen.
Yeah, but as far as trios go and as far as how we feel and maybe the adult beverages that are flowing in through my system at this point in time, because you couldn't have watched this game without a drink. I mean, I know, Brian, I know you're straight edge, your special diet and everything like that, but whatever you do to cope, you have to do something to maintain your stress level, because it never appears to be that easy ever, whether it's the Bengals, hey, who actually won a game, and or you're playing the Browns. It doesn't matter who they're playing. The Steelers are always going to give you some anxiety. The only thing is, I'll let you even sing today if you want to, Brian. We were talking about this. I had a certain James Brown song in mind. A little bit of Godfather of Soul. I feel good.
I feel good. I knew that I would.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Zach, but I know, you know, you guys get to do the whole pregame thing without me, and, you know, I was sad face and whatever. But thank you guys stepping in while I was out for the Thanksgiving holiday. And there's a lot of Cleveland Browns fans, friends, family, being from Northeast Ohio, living exactly equal distance on a diagonal line, an hour direction from Cleveland and/or Pittsburgh, wife being a Cleveland fan. A lot of people talking a lot of smack, especially after the last game, and I couldn't help myself but to rub it in a little bit that a guy who went undrafted, went unsigned, because it's not like he was undrafted and a priority free agent, you know, following the draft. He had to go to rookie camp and then kick Brogan Roback off the roster in order to even go to camp. And then he didn't even make the roster, and they brought him back after they traded Josh Dobbs. And somehow he finds himself into a starting role and defeats the Cleveland Browns, who have, you know, the top overall pick from last year, all these other things. And I'm already hearing it from the Browns fans. They're like, well, we were without our safety. He got left off of coach's decision, and Myles Garrett was suspended, and this guy was hurt, and this guy was hurt. But you didn't hear any of that when the Steelers and Browns were playing on a short day, and Juju Smith-Schuster got knocked out, Deontay Johnson got knocked out, and James Conner left the game. None of that counted. The Browns fans wanted to rub your nose in it. So I'm going to tell Steelers Nation out there, rejoice, drink a little bit of the bubbly, and just, if you find a Browns fan, grab them by the back of the scruff of their neck and just shove their nose right in it, because you deserve it. You deserve it, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. I see no problem with it.
Brian,
I got one thing to say to one of our YouTube followers, or perhaps our YouTube trolls, Mike D, big Browns fan. Talked a lot of crap on our pregame episode, and, you know, was very adamant Browns were going to win 21-3. He was back and forth telling people to show up at 4:30 after the game to see what it was like, and then he didn't show. I mean, what's up, man? What's up, man? You didn't come back. You didn't face the music. You know, I'm ready to drop a big dirty word, but I'm not gonna. All I'm gonna say is blank Cleveland.
Well, wait a minute. I'm here, and Colton Brown has already found him. Yeah, he's already here, like about a half hour ago. Colton Brown showed up in the YouTube comments. Colton, shout out to you, bud. We were already looking at this, and he deleted that comment with a bunch of the crying, laughing, hysterically emojis. And he comments again, you're not deleted the comment that told me to be here around 4:30 while I'm here. Browns garbage, 7-9. Browns garbage 7-19 done. Let's go. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, what else can you say about it? I mean, you got to feel good about all of this, the victory, the Steelers record. I mean, there was something that was said in the halftime show, for those of you who are watching on TV. I think we all were, the CBS program, the feed. And who was it? Was it Nate Burleson, or was it? It was Boomer Esiason, wasn't it? And he was talking about culture, and he was talking about the Steelers still getting it done, even with this unknown duck calling champion quarterback who, you know, he struggled at times in this game. It wasn't perfect, but you know what? He got done what he needed to get done. Got bailed out, unlike Mason Rudolph, with some big catches from some of his receivers, notably James Washington. We're going to go through some of the story of this game. We're going to go through some of the playlist stuff and this and that. But I think the biggest thing overall, the Steelers were down 10-0. I don't think any of us felt really good about this. I don't know. I'm not even sure how confident you guys felt going into this. I thought playing a home game that, you know, the Steelers, they were still what, 6.5-point underdogs going into this, wasn't that what we said, Brian?
Yeah,
something like that.
I thought it was two.
Was it only two? I don't know. I thought it was a little more, but I could be wrong. But they were still underdogs, even as a home team. And everybody's still on this Cleveland Browns bandwagon. Dan Fouts, of all people, who I want to take two number two pencils, sharpen them up, and stick them in each ear while listening to the broadcast, and him talking about, well, the Browns team is finally, they're showing what they could be and what we thought they were going to be before the season and everything else. You mean like practically mathematically eliminated from the playoffs? Because that's what we're looking at here. I know I'm feeling bullish right now, but you know what, guys? I just saw the Jets lose to the Cincinnati Bengals. They're still on the schedule. I'm not feeling too bad about that. The Cardinals are a three-win team as well. You know, they're down, you know, as we're recording this against the Rams team that hasn't been very good. So we'll see how that ends up turning out. We know the Ravens, it was a downpour. We thought there was going to be a lot of rain, 100% chance actually, maybe even mixed with snow or ice or whatever was supposed to be coming to Heinz Field. That skipped over and went to Maryland instead. And they won a slop fest over there in San Francisco off of Justin Tucker's leg. But, I mean, firmly, the Steelers, they have an opportunity here. Really, the big one that's going to be left on the game is the last home game against the Buffalo Bills to maybe secure a postseason or a playoff spot, I should say, secure their wild card spot, maybe even move up. And I feel the Steelers showed a lot today. I'll kick it over to you first, Brian. What did you see that really impressed you with the Steelers today?
Well, I'll tell you, to me, there's two things. First of all, Big Bad Bud. Big Bad Bud is Big Bad Bud. And there's so many grown-ass men on that defense. But Bud is continuing to impress nearly every game. You know, he's being the dominant player that I think they all hoped he would be. And we'll have to see what happens at the end of the season. But he's just balling out. And, you know, we talked about the offensive side of the ball. James Washington, what a game for James Washington, right? And you mentioned that, you know, the Steelers receivers are bailing out Duck Hodges. And one of the reasons I think that is the case, And Zach and I talked about this in the post or pregame, is Hodges was at least giving them the opportunity to go for the ball, whereas the last few games Mason's just been hesitant to pull that trigger, and Duck, again playing with house money, got nothing to lose, said let's see what happens, and good things happened. You know, it was a less than glorious beginning to the game, but Once he hit James Washington over the middle and got a nice big first down, man, he seemed to settle in and trust himself. Was he perfect? As you said, no, made some mistakes. But, man, you got to like the moxie that the kid has and the willingness to take a couple chances. It ended up being a quite enjoyable game. The defense continues to be the reason this team is going to win. As Mike Tomlin said in the post game with a big smile, he didn't kill us.
No, almost though. He was almost, everyone that was anti-Rudolph, that was a really bad pick. I don't know if it was his or Deontay Johnson's fault, but he makes such decisions with the ball so quick that he was going there regardless of what Deontay Johnson did, and that could also hurt you too. Zach, what stood out to you today, my professor friend?
Yeah, I mean, from what Ryan and I talked about in the pregame podcast, I think you look at the defense in the first Browns game. They didn't force any turnovers. They got barely any heat on Baker Mayfield in that offense. You saw Baker extending plays and kind of making things happen with his feet. I thought that was going to be a big part of what was going to allow them to have success this week, because the Browns kind of controlled that game. You know, they were up 14-7 last time, and you never really felt that even though it was a one-score game, the Steelers really had a chance because of the lack of pressure and turnovers they were forcing. But, I mean, they come out today, they're forcing turnovers, they're getting after Baker Mayfield, bringing him to the ground, and they're getting out ahead on a lead, whether it's a tie game 10-10 or getting out to that big lead that kind of helped them seal the game. That allowed them to pin their ears back and just go out and play football, and really forced the Browns now to have to make the plays. And as we saw, they weren't able to. That Aaron interception in the game to Joe Hayden, the strip sack fumble by Bud Dupree, those type of plays weren't present in the first game. I think that was really what kind of swayed the momentum. I don't really think the defense was what got them this win, because I do think the offense kind of carried their weight more this time than we have seen in recent weeks. So I think it was more of a joint effort, but those big plays by the defense, I think, are what kind of made this game go in favor of Pittsburgh as compared to what we saw in recent weeks. Because we've now seen what happens when the defense doesn't make those plays. It's not always pretty. But luckily, it was a pretty picture today, that's for sure, by the end of the game.
You know what? I'm going to accredit Across the Bridge off of Twitter for saying this. And this is something that we've banged our drum on, all three of us. Mike Tomlin right now, coaching job. You know, everybody that wanted Tomlin's head. What would you consider Duck Hodges? QB4, if that, maybe almost QB5. No Juju Smith-Schuster, wide receiver 1. No James Conner, running back 1. A lot of people would discount that based on, you know, their regression this year, lack of production. They were both Pro Bowl players last year. Okay. Stephon Tuitt, definitely having one of the top seasons that he's had and one of the highest paid players on the entire Steelers roster. No Marquise Pouncey. And somehow the Steelers are 7-5, 6th seed in the AFC with 4 games left. They say Coach Tomlin is an elite head coach in the NFL. There's no other answer. I cannot disagree whatsoever.
No, not at all. I mean, you look at the job that he's done. You look at the coaches in the league right now. You can make the argument about Kyle Shanahan and Harbaugh all you want to, but they have the full pieces and know what they've done. There's no denying that. But with the hand that Tomlin was dealt, I mean, yeah, it hasn't been pretty at times, but to have 7 wins with the talent, or really kind of lack thereof, that they've had at times on offense especially, you know, to be able to coach this team to 7-5, you know, a coach ride or dies with what his team does on the field, and I think he deserves all the credit in the world for what he's gotten to this point, because no one expected the Steelers to do what they're doing right now, regardless of trading for Minka Fitzpatrick. The second that Ben went down, they could have packed up shop. The season could have been done, especially then when you start seeing the world without Le'Veon Bell, without Antonio Brown, Juju goes down. But they've continued to persevere and push forward, and they haven't lost a step, even with all the adversity they faced in games like the Browns 2 weeks ago. I think that kind of takes a special coach to allow you to put that in that position, and allow the team to continue to rally behind them, to be able to willing to go out and fight every single down, knowing that you still have a chance to make the postseason after you start 0-3. Yeah, that's a lot of the talent we've seen on the defense, but credit has to be given to Mike Tomlin for even being the coach that's being able to pull these guys together to put out this production on the field and get by or dominate it sometimes with the talent that he's had on offense especially.
Great organizations overcome obstacles. And I hate quoting Colin Cowherd, but that's a quote from Colin Cowherd when he says the Pittsburgh Steelers on their third string quarterback just beat the most talented Cleveland Browns roster in a decade. Great organizations overcome obstacles. Lousy organizations create them. When I'm quoting Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock, who said, "I don't understand what's going on. The Steelers should be terrible."
They should be.
Because they should be. This should be a horrible team right now, considering what they've had to go through. And for people out there who were calling for Tomlin's job at the end of last season, continued to call for it at the beginning of the season, be glad you didn't get your wish. Because this is without a doubt, his best coaching job of the season to get this and you know, you hate to use the term ragtag group, but as you just pointed out, the pieces that are missing from this team are not inconsequential in any way, shape, or form. And to have this team, regardless of how this season turns out, but to have this team on the cusp of being playoff eligible is absolutely staggeringly odd.
Well, Brian, this is almost, you know, we're headed into Christmas time now. I see the CBS was heavily promoting Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, one of my all-time favorite, you know, TV shows, and something that Browns fans used to poke fun at Mason Rudolph and said they wouldn't let him participate in any more football games. And I like to kind of rub that in their nose, too, because the Island of Misfit Toys ended up coming around. There's no Antonio Brown. There's no Ben Roethlisberger. There's no Le'Veon Bell. There's not even Juju. There's not James Conner. You got guys like Deion Kane, Duck Hodges, BJ Finney, and Benny Snell football smacking you around in the face. And, you know, what else can you say about that? Everybody was calling for Tomlin's head. The Steelers started 0-3. The only team they beat in the first five games was the Bengals with an overtime loss to the Ravens, where they started 1-4. And here you go. They're now 7-5 with four games to go. Can you imagine if this team ends up 11-5? I mean, I still think it's unlikely because they got to go into Baltimore at least for the last game of the season. I mean, I'm not going to discount the other teams on the schedule. Like I kind of did with the Cardinals and Jets, but this is still going to be competitive football. They're still playing with house money here and some guys playing with moxie or whatever you want to say. That, like I said, Deion Kane was on a practice squad roster for the Indianapolis Colts just like 2 weeks ago. You can't discount that, man. James Washington, now, this is the interesting thing for me. James Washington goes out and, I don't know, where they were deer hunting, weren't they? With him and Duck Hodges. Yeah. How does Duck Hodges have a better chemistry with Mason Rudolph, the guy he played with in college? I don't know that it necessarily does, but the big plays are finally materializing. I'll at least say that. The light's coming on for a few of these guys. A lot of people were really down on Bud Dupree. I talked about this in the preseason. I said something, or in the offseason, or whenever I said it, I said, you know what, I named a bunch of guys that it took 4 or 5 years for these edge rushers, including like some all-time greats like a Michael Strahan, in order to come on the scene bursting, you know, with fire. And here we go with Bud Dupree, you know, kicking ass and taking names. There's no other way to say it. Grown ass man performances today. And you know what? He was probably like a missed tackle or two from a, you know, an elusive Baker Mayfield from having even more, as they brought him down 5 times, which I thought they would bring him down a lot more. Full week of preparation, playing at home, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I'm going to go through some other things here within the game, but I mean, I'm going to kick this one over with Zach, because I know, Zach, me and you sat there during camp for several of these sessions, and we thought James Washington was going to be this huge playmaker for the Steelers this year. Finally, now, everything we said doesn't sound like we were taking crazy pills, and everyone else can see what we were talking about during the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, we saw last year during training camp the same exact thing. We saw a guy where it's like, well, this makes sense why he was the second-round pick for the Steelers going into this year. I mean, he did everything that was asked of him. But then you got into the regular season, and it seemed like that confidence kind of started to shatter a little bit. And then, you know, we started to see signs of life towards the end of last season. We made this couple crucial catches towards the tail end of the year. Then it came into the offseason. He lost the weight. He reformed his body. I mean, he jumps off the page. His hands are the size of dinner plates. The guy just has the traits that you want. He's a deceptive route runner. And then he started the season off. He was kind of slow those first couple weeks. He had a decent game against the Patriots with that one large chunk. But then since the Ravens game, beginning of October, I mean, he has been on an absolute tear, notching, finally getting his first 100-yard game, seeing the stats and production he is. I mean, right now, he's averaging, I think after, I tweeted out at halftime the stats, but that stat increased even more after that 44-yard gain. He's averaging 19.2 yards per catch, which is good enough to be top five in the NFL right now. He's turning in to that deep threat that the Steelers have been needing. He's making these difficult acrobatic catches that we saw him do at camp on one-on-one drills. We saw him do it at Oklahoma State. He's finally starting to turn into that number two deep threat. And right now, truth be told, really the number one. I think he's been easily the most impressive Steelers receiver to date so far, and that's including Juju. I think seeing him do what he's doing should allow Steelers fans to be confident that hopefully he's going to continue to hit his stride and start putting these games together where he can be a very legitimate vertical threat for this team. And since you have a quarterback like Buck Hodges, Devin Hodges, that has the opportunity to go and to continue to air it out a little bit further, I think that's going to help Washington get to that point where he needs to be. I'm excited to see him doing this because it seemed like it might have been a little bit longer. But fans also need to realize that players don't always get that juju treatment right out of the gate where they come into the NFL, they blow the doors off, and they set the world on fire and become a media favorite nationally. Washington is starting to get that level. I mean, he's the Steelers' leading receiver right now. And I think he's going to continue down this path, hopefully, and turn into the receiver that they wanted him to be last year.
Hey, Brian. We have to go to the I told you so department, but before we do, Mark Cabully was reporting that Mike Tomlin entered the Steelers locker room doing some Ric Flair wooing, which is usually reserved for the Pirates, I guess, the woos. But I know you're not the big pro wrestling guy, but there is a Ric Flair quote I got to throw out for – there's a portion of the fans who listen to the show that like when I do this, and it's to be the man, you got to beat the man. And quite frankly, the Cleveland Browns are not the man. Freddie Kitchens wore a Pittsburgh Started It t-shirt. Did we all see this? And, he was quoted after with this. I'd wear it again. It isn't smart, but I kind of feel bad, Dave Damaschek said something about him. He says he feels bad for the guy. He says, as I've said since January, the idea of a locker room with that collection of egos was going to be managed by a guy in caps who'd never been a head coach at any level was a recipe for disappointment. This sounds like somebody else we know that may have said some of these things multiple times and caught a lot of flack about it. And I'm beating my chest here like Tarzan, because even if the Steelers lose the next four games and the Browns end up with a better record, I get to gloat about this until they meet each other again in a regular season game. It feels good, man. I'm telling you. But aside from that, that is just some little personal notes. I know some people are going to relate with me on that. Can you believe that the Steelers ran 9 less plays on offense than the Browns? They got beat 32 minutes and 6 seconds to 27 and 54 seconds. 27 minutes, 54 seconds. So roughly about 4 minutes and change more time of possession to the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland Browns run 9 more plays. And that Cleveland Browns offense netted a 1.6 yard per play less than the Steelers did. They were in the net yardage much less, 323 to 279 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So they gained 44 less yards. Do I need to say again that this guy was a Cinderella story? And by the way, he wasn't deer hunting. He was duck hunting. And they went and did the duck hunting because they did it the week before too. So I stand corrected. But as we go through this game, I mean, the first quarter was kind of the, if it was German, I don't know. I don't want to swear in German either. But we all know it stunk. It smelled like crap. They gave up a field goal. They did force one punt, and then it was a touchdown. They were down 10-0. And then I think the big punt in the turnover on downs, obviously, I mean, that was Garrett Gilbert just kind of flinging things around. But that first half, and the reason I'm throwing this to Brian specifically was, didn't you feel like the fix was in? Like the refs. Hashtag the refs stink. Yes.
They stink. Let me tell you, I don't think my GIF got as that much of a workout in any other game this season. Oh, my God. Look, I still am convinced that after the game, a representative of the Browns team or fan club was delivering a check to that crew. There's just no – it was it was that bad.
I mean, there was even one of the balls. The reason I immediately thought of that was when Garrett Gilbert heaved one up at the end of the second half there, Cam Sutton was basically like tackled by Odell Beckham Jr., grabbed by the pads and driven down. And we've seen so many bad offensive or defensive pass interference calls. Are the refs just like not calling it? They've been instructed to just ignore the new directive that came out during the preseason. I'm not exactly sure what's going on there, but Mike Tomlin, well, first we have a bad spot, right? It was Kareem Hunt, I believe.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Oh, my God. He was stopped like 4 or 5 yards further back. And I'm like, I would almost toss a challenge flag on that because that ends up costing the Steelers there. You know, they end up converting right off of that. I want to say it was like second and nine, something like that, as opposed to, you know, just it like second and 14, for example. And then you have the Duck Hodges false start, which I don't know, guys. I've seen Byron Leftwich go under center, shake his hips like he was dancing to that James Brown song, "I Feel Good." And like, what the heck were they calling there? You have to see something irrefutable on video evidence for the Now, the Jarvis Landry catch was an amazing catch. And had that been someone from the Steelers catching that ball, I would have been pounding my fist and saying, that's a catch. But, of course, since it's the other way, I'm going to be biased and say, no, it's not a catch. And you need something irrefutable in order to overturn it. But, of course, they overturn it. And then there was the punt down at the 1 yard line, of which there was some type of possession. It even got the old curmudgeon Dan Fouts, even older than you, Brian, to agree and say that that was a bad call. And I'm just like, I'm sitting there shaking my head. I'm like, something here is going to happen, and then it's going to go against the Steelers' favor. And then we're all going to be called the idiots and jerks and a-holes and everything else for saying that the referees cost the game. But for the a better portion of it, man, it wasn't going very well.
The referees did their best to try and get Cleveland and keep them relevant. I mean, first, I guess hard counts are now illegal. Maybe there was a new rule change. It came down immediately. Hard counts are illegal. And then, you know, we're going to make up rules on the spot on the punt that should have been a touchback. Okay, yeah, clearly he didn't have control of the ball, but we're going to say he did just for the hell of it. Or, you know, came down to the announcers just being befuddled by some of these calls. Bud gets a roughing the passer penalty that I also thought was ridiculous. TJ is being held literally every play. I mean, I've talked about this for 3 games. He's getting the James Harrison treatment. Apparently, the refs just think he's too good, and so the other team should be allowed to cheat a little bit because he's being held consistently around the throat and neck by an arm. And it never gets called, but it drives me out of my mind. I've now got 2 bad call bricks because I ripped my bad call brick in half on the false start, or not the false start, the whatever that Duck Hodges false start was, because
not a false start.
There's no excuse. Yeah, not a false start. There's no excuse for them to be this bad, and to not understand the rule book any better than they do. It just drives me crazy. And talking about pass interference, and because you talked about Odell Beckham dragging Sutton down, which was very clear to me. You could see it easily. There's no way you can challenge it because clearly they're never going to overturn anything. And then, you know, while I didn't think there was enough evidence to overturn that the catch by Jarvis Landry, it was close enough that had it been called on the field as a completion, I would have said they can't overturn it.
Correct.
But it's the same way the other way around. If it's called an incompletion, there's not enough evidence there to overturn it. You cannot conclusively see whether his toe is down when he has control of that ball. But that, be that as it may, the refs were foiled. The bad guys in the black and white stripes did not succeed in gifting this game to the Browns. So, you know what? Blank the refs, blank the Browns, blank Cleveland. I don't care.
Yeah, well, blank. By blank, Brian means he wants to say some of the sailor or trucker language that we use in the back rooms.
Yes, exactly.
We can't say that. I know Zach may not be young ears now. He just had a birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Zach.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think you're old enough to rent a car without extra penalty now.
Yeah.
So
yeah, rent a car, I'm going to cruise by myself. It's all downhill from here, so it's all good.
Speaking of downhill, man, how much worse would you feel if you were a team such as, oh, I don't know, the Carolina Panthers? Now, I understand they lost Cam Newton, but that was their biggest loss. Or you were the Jets who spent all this money on free agents and drafted a top guy. Or who else can we throw out there, throw under the bus? I mean, the Colts were a playoff team last year. L.A. Chargers, who are on Tyrod Taylor watch. Who else can we throw under the bus? Dallas Cowboys? Let's just throw anybody in the NFC East while we're at it. Philadelphia Eagles?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Mike Tomlin being able to do this is just incredible. And I know we were saying, you know, temper expectations with the Duck. He got some, you know, nice, long, deep passes. I know the Browns fans are already making up some excuses. Well, we lost some guys in the secondary. Well, you had Denzel Ward holding people's arms pinned behind their back, and they were still making great plays. So at least you had that going. And that happened to at least James Washington at least twice. I know Deontay Johnson was looking for one at some point. I mean, there's only so much the refs are, you know, the refs are under the gun too. They're trying to not like make calls that are necessarily like, oh, well, hey, we decided the outcome of this game. But, you know, I know somebody's going to jump in there and be like, well, the Steelers beat this team or this team and this and that. And, you know, there's going to be the excuses. Hey, a win is a win is a win, and a loss is a loss is a loss. You know, I really wish some of those games earlier in the year would have been even more different, because it would be really great to be like 8-4 or 9-3 at this point too, with some of the close victories. But the fact of the matter is that they're closing out these victories now, and I mean, most people are going to overlook Mike Tomlin. They're probably going to be talking about John Harbaugh or whatever for what the Ravens are doing, which nobody really expected them to be 10-2 and just walloping everybody for the most part. And, you know, it sucks that they're in the same division, because, you know, if the Steelers are in like the AFC South or the AFC West, even with the Chiefs, you know, they're in the thick of maybe winning the division. You know what I mean? Instead, they're behind a 10-2 Baltimore Ravens team, and it kind of sucks that the Buffalo Bills are having like a pretty phenomenal year too. So, just on the outlook here, what did the Steelers take from this game? Because, you know, we're talking about things like, we mentioned Deion Kane, we mentioned James Washington breakout game. You know, Deontay Johnson didn't do a whole heck of a lot, but this team gets Pouncey back. We might expect them to get Juju or James Conner back. It should be the sky's the limit, right? I mean, that's what we're looking at. I believe that they should be able to build upon this and, you know, maybe perhaps improve. If the offense could score points, we know the defense is legit.
Yeah, I think the thing that stood out to me the most, I never even realized it until earlier on the day, that this was the first game in five games that Steelers had scored more than one offensive touchdown. It didn't seem like that because they've been winning games, and you really realize how much they've been depending on the defense to really do the scoring, or Chris Boswell's leg to be as consistent as it has been. But I think we get Juju back in the mix there. The difference with him coming back now to this current offense, you have guys like James Washington, Deontay Johnson, who have been producing. They weren't producing at a higher level before, which was really putting a lot more pressure on the Juju to be able to produce anything, which he wasn't. Having him come back, I mean, he will reinsert himself as the number one receiver, because even as good as James Washington has been, Juju is still the number one. But defenses are going to have to start respecting it a little bit more in my mind, because we've seen enough consistent production over the last 6 weeks or so from James Washington to make him really kind of warrant, you know, maybe we should be looking him over the top, because he's blowing the top off these defenses and making these combative catches. Deontay Johnson's proving himself to be a very effective route runner, strong hands, do good in the open field. So I think when Juju comes back, that should only help elevate the pass offense. Because before it was him and a bunch of unproven guys. And yeah, while they're still unproven in the grand scheme of the entire offense, you have to start respecting them a little bit, because they've been producing some level. I think the emergence of Benny Snell has certainly helped as well. And I think having him and Connor in the same backfield once they come back can really start to wear down. I think it was Eric that tweeted out there that Benny Snell is built for fourth quarter football. Because he really is. I mean, when you get in a lead like that, you don't want to tackle a 5'10", really a 5'8", 220-pound running back over and over and over again. And you start getting worn down no matter how good your defense is. You put him with James Conner, who want to run through you, not around you. That could really bode well for the Steelers, and hopefully trying to find more of an identity, which I think they have an opportunity to do more of under Duck than they did under Mason Rudolph. Finding that identity as a power run offense that can hopefully blow the top off of the defense when given the opportunity to do so.
You know, go ahead, Brian. I'm going to say, because I was going to say, I wanted to backpedal on some comments about the Duck, but you can go ahead first.
I just my two cents on this. I think the Juju coming back, if and when he does come back, you know, I know he practiced limited, I think, at one point in the week, but I don't know how close he is with the knee, and we haven't heard a lot of you know, really in-depth analysis of what that knee injury is. But, you know, assuming they get Juju back, and assuming that James Conner can come back and stay healthy, yes, I think – I don't want to say the sky's the limit. I think that's going a little too far when you're dealing with who you've got at quarterback. Not that Duck Hodges has done anything but do exactly what they needed. But, you know, it's – they certainly should be more productive than they have been. And it will greatly depend on how creative the coaching staff can continue to be to put these guys in the best position to succeed, and then they have got to execute those plays. I think this is fantastic developmental learning time for them to have all these young guys getting what are essentially completely impactful playing time. And the longer that they continue to do this and the longer they continue to see these guys, the better off it is for the Steelers down the road. But I've ridden this since, you know, game three, and I'm going to keep saying it. How far they go is dependent on how well the defense plays. And if the defense continues to ball out the way they have, if they continue to get turnovers, if they continue to you know, limit teams to under 20 points, this team has a chance to win every game. You know, it comes down to the offense doing enough to win and not putting the defense in a bad position and causing more havoc than they need. The defense can be that good, and with the way they're continuing to play, it's steel curtain time, man.
Well, I mean, that's no different than they still need a game manager. They still need like a Trent Dilfer, right? I mean, somebody's got to be able to make a play here or there.
And sure.
If Duck can at least do that. I mean, that's where I'm coming back from, was the pick that was thrown was that's showing it could be bad. And the first two drives were showing it could be bad. And then they started to get some of it together, as Zach was saying, you know, getting Benny Snell, getting him in gear too. That you know, that's game script too. And I thought that the Cleveland Browns maybe had a better game plan to at least start the game. And then for everybody that says the Steelers coaches and whatnot can't make adjustments, I was just reading something here. This was from I don't have her full name here. Diana from ESPN. Come on, bring it up. Of course it doesn't say. But anyways, she was back in the locker room and got a comment anonymously, spoke to several Steelers players, I guess, about Mike Tomlin. Said players on defense pointed to adjustments made at half. They said he straight up went high school football coach and drew up how they were going to defend Cleveland. End quote. Since the Browns were showing a different look, quote, he saved the game. And I think that's a pretty profound comment there, because you have a number of talented guys there. There were things that were going on in the game, particularly like using tight ends, you know, that had been pretty good for the Steelers. You know, the Steelers had been decent against that, but that had always been their Achilles heel before. They were running the football pretty well in the first half, and the Steelers made all of these adjustments, not only on defense, but also on offense. I think we really saw it near the end of the first half, because what ends up happening is that you have this drive, what, with about 2 minutes left to go. Okay, the Steelers had gotten a field goal, but the defense had forced this three and out right at the two-minute warning, and it gave Duck Hodges a minute and 48 seconds and I think a pair or maybe all three timeouts for Pittsburgh to just – they let go. They got rid of the shackles on him and let him sling the ball around the field. And then all of a sudden, that's where you're seeing, you know, there was a big play to Tevin Jones, of all people. I joked about this last week. That was pretty bad, but I said I thought there was somebody wearing a Tevin Jones jersey in the crowd in Cincinnati, and it was Tevin Jones. No, that was just Tevin Jones, because we were sitting close to the benches because there was nobody there. But anyway, it was just, you know, there was that big play to James Washington, and they're letting him uncork the ball. And I know a lot of people are going to think, oh, well, all the big plays, you know, that's going to make Duck look better because at least for this game, they were executed. There was always criticism on Ben, too, when he didn't execute versus when he did execute. We could all go back to the 1 year with connecting with Sammy Coates for five straight, you know, games and whatnot, connecting on touchdowns and everything. But they tie that game at the end of the half, and I think they saw that they had something there. And as far as the game plans that you have let's talk to people about this, Zach. When you go into a football game, you have a game plan, but I mean, you're pretty much up to an X amount of plays that you're like, well, we're going to run this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. You're kind of testing the defense to see what they're going to give you, at least on the offensive side, or conversely, defense versus offense. And then all of a sudden, you know what? You got to start coming up with stuff in the dirt. It's not like you could script the entire game. You have a few things that you saw on film. You're going to see what's going to work. You're going to try and take advantage of, let's say, inexperienced or rookie players. I don't think that people necessarily understand that when we say two halves of football, it really means two halves of football.
Yeah, I mean, every coach does their own different thing. I know some coaches will go and have a five-play script to start the game. Some will do 10. You have some coaches that can do 20, and no matter what, they will not break it. Some coaches will go and they'll have a 10-play script, and the first two plays go for negative 10 yards, and they're like, well, we're throwing this out, and we're just going to play football now, you know, to try to get a feel for what the other team does. And I think the Steelers' slow starts, I've always attributed to that, because very seldom do we see them come out just, you know, bat swinging, coming out there, going, go out and try to put on these huge drives right off the bat. I think that's why you see a lot of these 0-3s, especially like the run pass that we've seen so often this season, early on in games. And, you know, we saw it again today. I think that's, you're trying to get a feel for what the defense is giving you, especially whenever you're going out. And last game you played against the Browns, you had Mason Rudolph. Now you have Doug Hodges. The Browns are going to adjust to that. You know, so you have to make that kind of that change. And I think as you start getting into a groove and you start getting more comfortable, and you have a guy like Duck Hodges who starts getting more confident, making those passes, starts taking advantage of the defense and what they're giving him, you're going to start seeing more confidence from everybody there. And that's when you start seeing the confidence grow, the vibe start hitting in, and you start getting into that rut where you're going to go and keep pounding forward on the rock. And I think realistically, the second half adjustments only just continue to end that factor. And that's why the Steelers kind of took over the game in the second half on both sides of the ball. So it's a thing that you don't always realize unless you see it or understand that. But it is a big part of football when it comes to game planning, because you go in expecting one thing, you don't always get what you expect, as teams are also game planning against you. It's not just you going against air, you know. So it's something to always keep in mind when you're looking at these games in a vacuum.
Yeah, exactly. In a vacuum is very good, because, you know, even down 10-0, I'm like, well, you know, they could be in trouble. But I'm also thinking, okay, if they can get something here, or at least get points before half. I knew they were – one thing that I'm always a big fan of, I come from the school of football that I like to defer. And when they get the ball for the second half, especially at home, because half the people are still in a restroom line or a concession line, there's not crowd noise if the visitor happens to have the football, which is why, I think every team likes to – not be the one to start off first in offense. Every now and then you see Tomlin try and go aggressive with that, but ever since he lost his Ben, that's the way he was, very aggressive like that. It reminds me of Avengers. You know, he says, hey, we have a Hulk. But, I think this is the thing where I think you could look at this and say, okay, they're going to go on the road and play the Cardinals. This could still be a success for winning football. And as you add some of these other pieces back into the mix, hey, you know what? This could be a team that could surge late, and that could be very dangerous. I understand that the Patriots and Ravens are probably going to be the top seeds, but at this point, I don't know that either one of those teams necessarily want to see the Steelers be able to get in there. Now, I know the Patriots handled the Steelers very easily in week one. That's basically preseason football, but the Ravens did not have – that was probably, aside from the game they had today against the 49ers, that was their biggest struggle. And I'd say the 49ers, it was, one, the Ravens were at home, and two, there was, you know, inclement weather. That has a lot to do with the game as well. So, you know, this is a team that if they could continue to – keep this going, I wouldn't necessarily count them out. I'm not going to say, you know, they're the Cinderella that goes all the way. I was very much, Brian, you will relate to this, very, very annoyed with the fact that Ian Eagle, who you called out, he was one of the guys who did the Westwood One broadcast that you listened to like about a month ago. He's usually one of the guys who does that too. And when it's a primetime game, And he asked Dan Fouts if seeing number six on the field always reminded you of Bubby Brister. And he's like, yes, every time. And I'm like, please don't do that. Don't put the scarlet letter on that guy. This is Duck Hodges, man. And then Dan Fouts thought he was a genius too, because he was talking about like selling duck calls and this, that, or the other thing. And they, I do believe there was a ban put on those. They didn't want those at Heinz Field today. I'm sure some people snuck them in anyway, but there was like this talk about what if they actually succeed in bringing in all these duck calls, and then all of a sudden these people are using duck calls and a bunch of ducks end up at Heinz Field. What would you do? Would the game be delayed or whatever? How crazy? I don't know how crazy that is. There were people talking about like Browns fans not being allowed in with Myles Garrett jerseys, which was complete BS. It was totally false. It was debunked by Bert Lawton of the Steelers PR department, who also said, source me. And, you know, that kind of just threw that all out the window. But I don't know, guys. Just some closing thoughts to put a bow on this game. I mean, we really didn't break it down by possession by possession by possession, because you know there was good, there was bad, there was ugly and this and that, and we'll discuss that over on the website, of course, and you know, written format as the week goes on here. But you know, as I digest my turkey and I think about my top guys, you know, doing whatever from this game, one guy that stood out to me today a lot was Devin Bush. If I got to see all the snap counts, which we don't have yet, I would surmise that he played a lot more than he had been playing in previous games. I'd like to see Vince Williams maybe a little more. I was trying to keep an eye on that with his share with Mark Barron, you know, things of that nature. But, you know, TJ Watt always shows up to play. Grown-ass man for sure. Cam Hayward always showing up to play, grown-ass man for sure. But Dupree is starting to become that guy as well, big plays all the time. And, hey, you know what? We talked about James Washington being a grown-ass man, but let's give a little bit to Joe Hayden for a little bit of a Cleveland revenge game, since this is the guy they discarded and all the Browns fans were scoffing and talking about how garbage or much of a bum that he was and always hurt and everything like that. And he gets to put the nail in the coffin for this game.
I think absolutely Joe Hayden gets a big GAM award there as a grown-ass man for coming up with that pick. It's got to mean a lot to him. Cam Hayward is just the OG, man. He's always a grown-ass man. He just is. He's having an absolutely sensational season. I gave you Bud Dupree. TJ Watt is game in and game out. You talked about Devin Bush. Ended up leading them in tackles in this game, which he has done several times. He still gets a little lost in coverage, so I'm not giving him a GAM award, but it's nice to see him continuing to play and maybe even make a bit of a rebound from having some downtime where you didn't hear his name. Just a heck of a game all around. It was nice to see Kareth White get a kick return twice that was past the 30.
I know.
I mean, I thought the world was going to end. We got, you know, it just was amazing. And I got to make one last comment. You know, as you said, you think some of them were snuck in, duck calls being it. I'm just curious exactly where they were snuck in and if you'd want to put them in your mouth after that.
Well, I think they're made out of plastic, man. So I don't think they're setting off metal detectors. It's colder weather. You could probably just put it in the front coat pocket of your winter jacket or whatever.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, don't say it. Don't say it. Well, you never know. There's some nasty people out there. They're sneaking in Fireball in plastic flasks. You didn't hear it here. You didn't hear it there. Here. You did not get the idea from Steel City Underground, Joe Bryan, or Zach, okay? Zach, man. Who you got standing out for the game?
Yeah, I keep thinking about what this D-line would be like if you had Stephon Tuitt healthy. Because, again, today we see just another outstanding performance of Cam Hayward and Javon Hargrave being absolute forces at the point of attack. I mean, I know the Browns' offensive line has been not that highly touted all season long for as porous and as weak at the point of attack as they've been, but Cam Hayward and Javon Hargrave are just having their way with that line. I mean, you saw them collapse in the pocket, Javon Hargrave getting after Baker Mayfield, Cam Hayward getting after Baker Mayfield. Seeing what they could do just continues to set the tone every single play. And if this defense still had Stephon Tuitt, not that Tyson Alualu and Isaiah Bugs haven't been solid, because they have been, but Tuitt was in the midst of his best season as a pro, and it wasn't even close. I mean, he was really starting to show strides of making the earning the money that he had been signed to make one of the highest paid defenders on the defense for the Steelers and just in the league in general. So I have to give love to the D lineman there, because I thought without them getting that pressure, you don't see some of the sacks we saw from Bud today. You don't see some of the pressure you got from TJ Watt. Not that they wouldn't have got it, because they were just beating off the edge the entire game, but they were making it very uncomfortable for Baker Mayfield to be able to have a clean pocket to stand back there. And that really kind of allowed the Steelers defense to pin their ears back and just play football, which is something that they weren't able to do 2 weeks ago against the Browns. So I was very complimentary of that. And just watching James Washington play, not to be a dead horse here, but he has so much play strength, big, strong hands. He's able to identify where the ball is in the air, locate it, track it, and make sure he's coming up down with it every play. I keep thinking about what next year could potentially have in store with a healthy Ben if he doesn't regress at all with his elbow injury, and then Juju, Deontay Johnson, and James Washington. I mean, that's a very solid receiving core, in my opinion, moving forward if they all continue to develop the way we've seen them. But watching him go out there and finally seeing what he's been doing from the grown-ass man's stiff arm he had last week to just being able to manhandle some of these balls away. I mean, that one touchdown, the guy was getting ripped to the ground around the neck on a pass interference, and he still manages to have the focus and just the strength to bring in that ball and not allow to touch the ground coming for the touchdown. I mean, that's stuff that top-tier receivers are made of. I'm not saying Washington is a top-tier receiver yet, but his ceiling certainly is a very solid starter in this league. And I'm glad to see him making that, and just his strength and, you know, being one of those Midwestern farm boys just really takes it all home for me for a GAM award.
Oh, man. I got a few more comments to add to this just based off of the Twitterverse that keeps going off here on my screen as we're discussing all these things. Number one is Jeremy Fowler, or I'm going to call 100% hack and a shill from ESPN. And I hate to call out people within our own profession or community, but this is his comment, guys, and it's going to make you sigh if you hadn't already saw it. Important to keep in mind with the Browns, front office didn't expect a 13-win juggernaut this year despite flashy moves. They expected modest progress, with 2020 the targeted breakthrough. The question Cleveland must answer is, can Freddie Kitchens shepherd that breakthrough? Are you freaking kidding me? This was the preseason. Everybody, it looked like the South Park meme with the guy who explodes all over his keyboard. That's what everybody was talking about with this team. They were favorites to win the AFC North. They were going to compete for a Super Bowl. That's some backpedaling right there. When I backpedal a little bit, it's like, sorry. It's like two steps forward, one step back. This isn't going all the way back to start. That's where Jeremy's going right here. So I'm going to call that out. And guys, I've sobered up as the program's gone on. So that's just me telling the truth here. Trey Essex, friend of the show too. Undrafted rookie out of Samford. Second start ever. 14-21. 212 yards. A touchdown. A pick. Throwing to a rookie, a second-year player, a free agent wide receivers, handing off to a rookie running back. Number one overall out of Oklahoma, Heisman Trophy winner, 25th start, 18-32, 196 yards, a TD, a pick, throwing to Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham, and handing off to Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Hashtag, I'm just saying. That is a thing of beauty as well to throw out there. Charlie Batch is also muttering that this game with the Buffalo Bills that's at Heinz Field could get flexed to prime time, and we're going to know that in about a day or two if it does. There's a lot of chatter about that since these are the two wild card teams matching up. So, guys, any other closing thoughts? I'll kick it to you first, Brian.
I'm coughing. I got a hack, and I'm muting and trying to be kind to our listeners, and I forget that I've done it because I'm old. Okay, let me just finish what I was trying to say to nobody. What's left on the schedule is they play three top 10 defenses. The Jets, the Bills, and the Ravens, all three have top 10 defenses. Arizona, number 31. They play, on the other hand, only one top 10 offense. That's the Ravens, who currently are the number one overall offense. But Arizona is 20, the Jets are 31, the Bills are 17. Every game is going to be this way. But they've shown the grit that they can find ways to win, and I just think we are looking at a season that's going to be much more successful than we anticipated when everything kind of fell apart.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that. I mean, the Steelers started out 0-3, and they are 7-2 since. I mean, that's a heck of a turnaround. Just look at the comparative between the two schedules that the Steelers go into that Bills game. I mean, they have the Cardinals next week, and assuming they can find some footing to go out there on the West Coast and win that game, and assuming that the Ravens continue their dominance and give a shellacking to the Bills next week, I mean, you're looking at a not potentially 9-4 and 8-5 football team going into Week 15, competing for potentially that fifth wild card spot. I mean, that, like you said before, Joe, that should be able to be flexed to prime time. I mean, that should be the game of the week at that point, assuming the Steelers take care of business next week and the Ravens take care of what they need to against the Bills the following week. I mean, that's a position that probably no one a month and a half ago thought the Steelers would be in, where they could be potentially looking at not even the sixth seed, potentially the fifth seed, depending on how things pan out for them. With the Bills really having a difficult schedule after that. I mean, the next three games for the Bills, you got the Ravens, Steelers, and the Patriots. I mean, none of those games are givens for them. But it's enjoyable to see the Steelers go out there. I know I had mentioned to you, Brian, during the pregame podcast that the one thing I was hoping for this game was to see more entertainment and a less boring offense. I think the Steelers provided that this week. It wasn't all sunshine and rainbows 24/7 throughout the game, but it was much more enjoyable. I didn't feel like I had the need to hold my breath every single time Duck Hodges dropped back in the pocket to throw, or Benny Snell or Jalen Samuels running the ball. So I think Duck has earned his opportunity to keep being the starter, I think, on a week-to-week basis. It was certainly a promising start for him this week, as he's now 2-0. And hopefully the Steelers offense can keep getting in the rhythm, start finding that identity. I mean, they could surprise some people, and no one expects them to win the Super Bowl, but the playoffs are a weird place, and you never know who could do what once you actually get into that dance. So as long as the Steelers keep taking care of business, I mean, they are in the driver's seat right now to control their destiny. I don't think they went out, but I think they're in a really good position right now to actually make some magic happen as we go into the last quarter of the season.
I have the cherry on top for the episode, guys. I think you saw it. You know who the game ball went to for today's game?
Marquise Pouncey.
Right over to Marquise Pouncey. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Zach, for joining me today, as always. And we're up against it, folks. Our Thanksgiving hangover has been pretty good. For me and Brian, even better.
O-H-I-O.
That's right. it's even sweeter because it's Jim Harbaugh, which I think Steelers fans will also enjoy as well. So don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe as always. For myself, my name is Joe Kuzma. For Mr. Brian E. Roach and the Professor Zach Meckler, we want to encourage all of our listeners, as always, to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.